Hello and welcome to Wonder Pod, episode 194, the 4G edition. By that I mean my fucking cable company sucks and I'm coming to you from my phone, which so far is working. My expert producer John tells me it doesn't sound too bad. Thumbs unless I go to speaker.
Thumbs are up.
You're way up. Up somebody's ass at my cable company. You just heard him talking. He's recording tonight so that we'll get this show to, well, basically Roger and Pat, hopefully by tonight or tomorrow. It's John.
Hey, everybody.
He wasn't going to be here, and then the weather saved him.
Yes, indeed. I had a work thing going on tomorrow with someone flying in from Montreal, and that got turned around because the weather tomorrow is expected to be bad here, and yeah, I was relieved.
I'm pretty sure it's weather that borked my internet. They usually tend to have problems when we get the first rainfall.
There's been some bad weather going on down there in the U.S. of A.
Yeah, it's not too bad here. Just rain, typical stuff.
Okay.
So I'm safe. That's the eastern half of the country. I don't have to worry about that. Speaking of the eastern half of the U.S., joining us this week, as he always does, it's Glycinator.
Hello.
Well, southeastern U.S.
Not totally.
So you've actually, yeah. So you've actually had to go back to being a student this
yeah,
week.
Yeah, it's weird. Forget why I'm here sometimes.
Yeah, to not sit in your dorm room and play on your 3DS or Vita. Or
Pretty much.
And also joining us this week, as he does from time to time, it's Gunsage.
Bruce is recording on his 4G phone.
4G phone, yeah. Hey, you sound better. You're not echoing this time. 4G phone, yeah. Yeah, really, really expensive device that I only use half of its features, probably. Okay, so gonna disappoint John. Glycinator, what have you been playing this week besides schoolwork?
Really, I've only been playing Awesomenauts this week. I don't have much to say for myself. They added a Valentine's Day update. Whoa. So now when you play all the levels, there's little hearts everywhere and flowers. Isn't that nice? So if you're single and depressed on Valentine's Day, then don't play that game, because then you'll get more depressed. So I wish I had more to say, but that's pretty much it. The game's getting pretty addicting lately.
Isn't it hilarious that all the tie-ins that everything tries to do now? Like, it used to just be MMOs. Right, you had like, especially with WoW, you had the Halloween and Christmas, and I think WoW did Valentine's Day. My memory's a little hazy on that.
I remember I used to play RuneScape, and they had all those holiday events, and people would go crazy.
Oh, yeah, RuneScape did it too. Yeah. I just remember the everybody trying to get a little animated pumpkin following them around in WoW one year, and a couple people got pissed off at me because I forget the set of things you had to do with it, but it was pretty buggy, because I was just standing there waiting for them to get their stupid pumpkins so we could go do some dungeons or something, and the dude came up and gave me one, and I had done nothing. I just stood there. And everybody's all pissed off because I've got the pumpkin. I'm like, well, I don't fucking want it. You take it.
That's the easiest way to play MMO, is just beg for stuff. That's what I found out.
I'm okay with it in starter areas, but when I get into the higher level areas and I hear people bitching about giving them free stuff, my nerves tend to start to go after a while. It's like, how did you make it to level 60 if by begging? And then I usually get an answer that I should have never asked for. Okay, John, what have you been playing this week since you didn't have to do work stuff, extra work stuff?
I've been playing a couple of things. Most of it has been with Peter, but on my own, I've been playing a bit of Kentucky Route Zero on Steam. It's one of those games that have been talked about as Game of the Years by various websites and such. So I bought it on a Steam sale. I think it was the autumn one I got it, and I haven't touched it since then. So I fired it up just to give it a shot. because I was playing, getting over a pulled wisdom tooth. I didn't want to do anything too strenuous, so this was a sit at the computer and point and click, because Kentucky Route Zero is a point and click adventure game. And it's very atmospheric and dark, and it's a little bit funny, but what it's an episodic game, and so far episodes 1 and 2 are out, and so far the episode one has seems like it's just there to kind of get you used to some of the mechanics, which is it's the pointing and clicking, but it's trying to get you used to the idea of pointing and clicking to drive around town on this map and how to find and interact with things in the environment. And not that there's a lot to do, but you walk up to a your dog and you can talk to it and you can look at it and stuff. It's regular point and click stuff, but the story of the game is it's kind of hard to describe Kentucky Route Zero, actually. Like you're a furniture delivery driver, and you've come upon this gas station, and it's all in pitch black darkness. And you kind of want to look around, talk to some of the locals there, and they're all kind of weird. And you get set on this path to find, to get to your delivery site. You need to find Route Zero, and this rumored a legend about Route Zero. Does it exist or not? And you've come across some weird folks that kind of help you along the way. And like everything is very dark, and you're illuminating things and trying to find light switches and such. And make your way through. But really, what makes the game interesting so far has been the dialogue, and meeting with again these strange folks. I don't want to get too into it too much, because some of it's pretty interesting. I don't want to give too much away, but it's all atmosphere so far. Like there's one part where you kind of go through a mine on a mine cart trying to get to the other side, because you got stuck in a place. And going through this dark mine, you can turn the lights on and off, and then you get different perspectives on the shadows of the. Like if you turn off the light, you kind of see what's in the foreground a little bit better, and then you start seeing people walking around in this dark mine around you that the characters can't see, and it makes things very spooky. And I don't know where it's going, to be honest, and that's part of the reason why I can't talk about it much, because. Again, I'm only in like Act 4 or Act 5 of Episode 1, and it kind of moves along in a good clip, so it's hard for me to say what exactly I'm getting into. Sorry to be vague, but that's kind of how it is. But it's interesting, it's one of those, one of those games so far that seems like, well, it's not really a game because you're not really doing anything yet. So I'll wait and see if the game gets a little more interactive or a little more, how much action there would be in a point and click, but we'll see what happens. So with Peter, we played some new games this week, certainly new for him. One of them was Turtles in Time Reshelled on 360. We were going through the games looking for something to play, and he recently has somehow gotten a small interest in Ninja Turtles. And I think it might be because they were in some McDonald's toys that we got in a Happy Meal, and wanted to buy them some Ninja Turtle underwear. So he knew, he saw them. He goes, "Oh, Ninja Turtles! Can we play that one, Daddy?" kind of thing. And so we got into there, put it down to easy, and he and I did pretty good. We got up to Shredder at the end. I think it's the end. I don't know if Shredder has two forms or not. I can't remember. It's been that long since I played it, but we made it all the way to the end. I think at the end I had 2 lives and he had none. So, and Shredder kind of dispatched us pretty quickly. So we didn't finish it. But this is a game that I think I talked about before, when Roger and some of my other friends were over for like a couch multiplayer night. This was one of the games we played, and I remember we were pretty frustrated that we got the Shredder, we died, and then it forces you to start at the very beginning of the game again. Again, pretty old school kind of philosophy, and like no continues or nothing, just boom, back to fighting Baxter Stockman at the end of the first level again, and it takes a while to get there, and we were like, no, we had enough of that, and so at that point, and Peter and I kind of had the same feeling as well. He was like, he didn't even get it either. Why he couldn't get another chance? 'Cause like. Because it certainly seems that most games that we play these days, you know, even when you hit that game over screen, this is a continue away from picking up where you left off. So he wasn't quite used to that as well. But the game itself, I guess, pretty good. I don't know if my memory of the old Turtles in Time is a little bit rose-colored glasses or not, but it's, you know, this remake is in HD, so it's pretty and stuff. But I remember some of the old frustrations I had, like those damn red spikes in the sewer level when you're riding around on the surfboards, and you know, you're fighting lots of Foot Clan. It's all great and stuff, but it's just a button masher. I don't really see much technique involved in it. There was a part where I came home from work the other day, and Peter was down here playing it while Wanda was making some supper, and he was having trouble with the rock guys that have like the cannons and the big pieces of steel that they hit you with, and he was, "Daddy, I can't do it. These rock guys are hitting me, right?" And I said, "Jump kick him." And he did one jump kick, and the rock guy just exploded, and he was, "Oh, Daddy, we did it!" So he was then jump kicking everyone all over the place. And then I said, "Peter, well, you got to do different moves than that. You know, the Y button, you know, is another move you can do." And so, you know, the Y being kind of like a special attack that kind of, you know, slashes and pushes guys out of the way as well as inflicting some damage. So then he was just hitting the Y over and over, Y. And I said, "Well, Peter, you got to use both X and Y." And of course, what I meant was, you know, alternate and mix it up. But he thought I meant, so he's pressing them both at the same time. So he was using two fingers from two different hands trying to hit X's and Y's at the same time rather than, you know, playing. So he was just button mashing and getting pretty far in it on his own. So that was pretty fun. And then finally, I won't get into this too much, but we were playing a lot of Sesame Street Connect. A friend of mine sent me this game with a National Geographic game for Peter to play. You know, he just got a new baby boy himself, but he, of course, being a baby boy, is a little bit too young to play Kinect games. So he said, you know, he'll pass them on to somebody who would appreciate them. So we finally popped that in, and since we got it around Christmas time, and we finally started playing that, and it's fun. It's an interactive, you know, it's a two-disc set. I think it's called Season 1 of Sesame Street Connect. And so it's 8 episodes. Peter is collecting for me some easy achievement points. So right now I'm sitting, I think, at 500 out of 1,000 already. So, you know, as you play each of the 8 episodes, you know, depending on what you do in them and if you watch the whole thing, you just get easy achievements. So it's pretty great. And certainly a reason for me to sit down to make sure that he completes all the challenges. So we're you know, in other than the learning, it's fun. You know, we're actually sitting down and doing it together and dancing and jumping, and so it's a lot of fun. I think it's a good one for the Pac-Man with the Pac-Man and what's the good name for his boy, the Pac-Man and the kid van. I don't know.
You're trying not to sound like a pedophile, because like you're trying not to say kid in the van or kid in the can. Yeah, it's yeah. Just, it's not working, man. Not the announcer's going to alone. Hell.
So, just say kid in the van. You know you want to. Just say it.
He's going to kill us all.
Pat, just get your boy playing this game, and you're both going to have a good time. And that's all I've been playing.
I'm pretty sure that's a level 3 violation of the Achievement Hunters Union International, using child labor to up your gamer score.
Maybe, but it works in my benefit. It worked for He-Man, man. He totally did enough grinding for He-Man on iPhone for me to get all the points I need, all the gems I needed to buy every upgrade. It was awesome.
The UN's going to have to update the child labor law guidelines. No making your children find all the skulls in Halo. Okay, so Gunsage, what have you been up to this week?
Well, let's see. Not much change from last week. Mostly I've been toying around with RPG Maker more, working on different stuff there. I got Might and Magic 6 free whenever I went ahead and got Might and Magic 10. I played it for all of 5 minutes and went, no. Uninstalled it immediately.
it's not a bad game. It's just I got so used to Might and Magic 10 being 100% turn-based, and then this one tried to take a more action-y angle to it. It doesn't explain anything very well. People don't even want to talk to you because you have literally no reputation, so they will literally threaten to call the town guard if you talk to them, just normal random peasants and civilians. And it's not a bad game. It feels like it's not put together well, but I know it's just because it's dated, and it's really hard to get into. I've been playing some Lucid, which is just a fun little puzzle game, and just kind of toying around with this, that, and the other. I've actually gone back to Final Fantasy XII quite a bit, just because it's fun to kind of go ahead and sit there and just let your people beat the crap out of people. But at least you get to do more than just auto battle in that one, so that's nice. But I haven't been playing that much, honestly.
Have you noticed, Gensei, you know, you said RPG Maker, and I tend to troll, whatever you want to call it, through all of the different aspects of Steam. Have you noticed all the Maker tools that have been popping up on Steam under the software section?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I mean, I'm sure that there are ones at the one end of the spectrum that are garbage, you know, but everything from music makers to modelers to RPG Maker to, you know, and as much as I'm getting a little tired of Steam and their green light early release, this is all getting kind of the hell out of hand. The software side stuff's actually kind of been impressing me.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
I think the main reason they're doing that is because of the Steam Greenlight stuff. They're encouraging more and more indie stuff to come up on there. And when Greenlight first went ahead and took off, I just started going through every single last one. I'm like, yeah, I'd play this. No, I wouldn't play this. Yeah, I'd play this. You know, just different stuff like that. And I want to say probably about five games that I actually said, yeah, I'd totally play that, they're on Steam. If they're not in early access, then they're, you know, fully available and ready to play. I think Might and Magic 10 might have been one of them, in fact. And, I mean, that alone makes me happy because it's, if anything, it's evidence that the community is growing stronger within Steam to where they're actually picking and choosing different stuff that they want to play that's already made, and also support games that maybe they have, you know, a Kickstarter that, you know, maybe it just one way or the other, somebody forgot about it or whatever. Like Wasteland 2, I totally forgot about that one. The only reason I haven't picked that up is because even though it's not available to play yet, they want you to purchase it for $59.99. I'm like, that's not even early access at this point.
Yeah, it's in early access.
Oh, you can actually play it.
Yeah, but it's still okay. Early access alpha for $60.
Yeah.
For an RPG. Here's the thing. It's a fine thin line of hypocriticalness, but I purchased EverQuest Next Landmark at their $60 price, but the bonuses you get and the fact that you never have to pay a dime again to Sony, it was enough of a guarantee. Wasteland 2 gives you no guarantees. It's Steam early access. Their Kickstarter, like you said, didn't do super hot. That's a little too far for $60. They should have probably put that at $39.99 like Dean Hall did with DayZ. I wouldn't purchase either of them at either price for early access, you know. Sony's got its fair share of issues with some of its MMOs and some of its games, but they... they're a much larger entity, so I'm slightly more comfortable giving them more money than I am, you know, some of these other guys.
Oh, yeah.
But every time I see Wasteland, it says early access, and I think a couple people on my Google Plus stream that were playing it. I just couldn't, if it had been beta, maybe I might have thought about paying $60, because I played the hell out of the original Wasteland. So, But yeah, unfortunately, Gunsage, the green light thing may go away, because for every Wasteland and DayZ and Might and Magic 10, there's 7 or 8 that are making it past the gate by farming votes that are broken or that don't have that much content and are asking $15-$20.
Well, they would have to be. You've seen some of these tags.
Well, we're going to get into the tag thing here in a little later, but Steam's going to have to do some tweaking. Let's just call it tweaking.
Yeah.
Because some of these early access games aren't even in alpha state, you know, and I mean, to a point, it's buyer beware as well, but we'll talk about that with the tags, but it's anyway,
it's an early alpha. It's still an elf.
Yeah. It's whatever comes before alpha. Zeta, zero. Anyway, as I was just saying to Gunsage, I finally gave in, and a little bit of it was peer pressure. I'm not going to deny, but that's still on me. EverQuest Next Landmark Alpha, which is open for me to talk about, unlike Elder Scrolls Online Beta, which apparently they're not going to drop the NDA on that bastard until launch. Gee, I wonder what Bethesda's afraid of. I can tell you that I'm not going to buy it at launch, but I can't tell you why. And the funny thing is about that, I'll tangent into Elder Scrolls Online. The funny thing about that is the tangent, or the reasoning, the context of why I'm not going to buy it would explain so much. But since I'm not media, Bethesda and ZeniMax will not release or will not drop the NDA, and it's going to do nothing but bite them in the ass. So there's that. But with EQ Landmark, I can talk about it all I want. It's an interesting concept from Sony. I think that's part of the reason why, after taking care of some things, I had the extra cash and went, you know what, I'm going to buy it. Because it is another sandbox building game. Honest to God, sandbox building game. I think later on they plan to add enemies and things, and with where they're intending to go with it, I'm gonna say it's probably gonna end up somewhere smack dab in the middle between Minecraft and Worm Online. But right now the only thing out there is building and resource gathering. The resource gathering is interesting because they have tiers. Tier 1's the very basic stuff. Tier 2's kind of the middle stuff, a little rare. Tier 3's really rare. And, of course, to do, you know, to learn how to make new things, you got to gather different, gather different tiers of resources. You can make all kinds of different picks. You can make all kinds of different axes. But here's the interesting concept. Now, the building side of it, obviously, it's tied in with resources. You have to get wood and stone, and I think there's copper and tin and iron, and there's a bunch of others I'm not remembering. But the building side of it, instead of being just a one set block like Minecraft, or a half a block, or some of the other things you can build with Minecraft, Sony has basically 3D building tools. And even the very beginner set are adequate to make some really cool stuff that is essentially gives you a bunch of different shapes, square, complete sphere, like hexagonal shapes, what I would call pie wedge shape, and you can do them in different sizes. So essentially, you can build a block building and then carve out a little tiny piece of it and make it wood trimmed. Or like for mine, because there's no glass in the game as of yet, and there may never be, I built my windows in one of my buildings with a kind of a wood frame outline like Worm Online's frames are. And so the thing I like about the game is that the additions that they're adding to your typical Minecraft sandbox game, at least on the building side. Now, you got to understand, this is an alpha, so they have the building and resources in. The one thing I would caution folks, well, first off, I don't know if there's a Mac version. I didn't check. Sorry, Glaze. Second off, is it's really, really resource heavy. I have an Intel i5 processor, 8 gigs of RAM, a Radeon R7 260X, 2 gig video card, and a good sized power supply, and it absolutely taxes it. Running it at medium to high. I can run it at ultra, and it'll run, but it's not stable. It's not fun to play. So that is the one thing I would caution people. But the interesting thing is even at, you know, kind of cutting my own throat with some podcast comments I've made in the past and paying $60, all the extra stuff that you get and all the future stuff you're going to get, you know, I could justify that cost to myself. But the other cool thing is, if you don't want to pay $60 or the really crazy $100 one, which I said, yeah, right, you can pay $19.99 right now and then get in at the beta, which is going to be in a couple months. I'll be talking about this as we go show to show, because I think it's got more to it than vanilla Minecraft and even some of the minor modded Minecraft. But it's definitely not the daily grind that Worm Online is. I'm hesitant and I'm leery because, come on, folks, it's Sony we're talking about. I'm sure they'll find some way to botch it up. But I've been impressed with it. Alpha crashes and all the things that you do with an alpha and all. The other thing I played a little bit about, and I know Gunsage messaged me on Steam when I bought this. It's part of the reason why I'm bringing it back up, and part of the reason is I played it this week, was I played some more Kenshi, that kind of top-down, Fallout-looking kind of RPG. I just basically, with it, been doing more resource gathering and kind of learning the building tools and the modeling tools. The thing I really find fascinating about it is you just don't go looking for combat when you're new to the game, because you will get your ass kicked. And what's interesting is that if I had never played Worm Online, I don't think I'd like Kenshi. But having played Worm Online and some other things where you really kind of have to build up your skill to go out in the world and fight most anything, has kind of changed my attitude and temperament about how you go about playing RPGs, whether they're MMOs, whether it's pure sandbox, whether it's partial sandbox, whether it's a pure RPG stuffed in a sandbox, you know. But Kenshi's got a lot of stuff, and again, it was another early access game that I find very interesting, because it seems like that if you want to pick one job, like trader, and just do that, interacting with the NPC world, you could do that, and you could have a lot of fun with it, if it's, you know, which makes it a little bit like they took Gunsage. What was that? Was that called Reseteer, A Shop Owner's Tale? Was that the one where you basically role played as a shop owner?
Yeah, Reseteer.
Yeah, you could basically play Reseteer inside of Kenshi. Build yourself a little village, put up your shop. You know, I mean, again, it's early access, so you got to kind of talk about it as you go along. I mean, the game runs brilliantly. I see it running on almost any machine. It takes a little bit of getting used to the top down and the camera. They could do some tweaks to the camera that definitely would help. But it's for the price. I think it's listed at $14.99 on Steam Early Access. It's worth that. Not going to be worth it if you're not an RPG player. You know, it's not one of those ones that has enough sandbox elements to satisfy non-RPG players. But definitely, if you're an RPG player and willing to understand that you're not just going to go out with the little sword you made and conquer the entire known universe, then you know you'll be okay. It'd be kind of like trying to speedrun Dark Souls would be, or you know, Dark Souls 2 would be my guess. And then finally, the other one I played that's MMO, the pure, true, old-school MMO, was Dragon's Prophet, which is also by Sony. I've been playing a lot of Sony games this week. It wasn't on purpose. Funny thing about Dragon's Prophet, and I think I talked about it on the podcast because it was an open beta. I played it in open beta, and I did not like it. The combat just really, it just was too button-mashy. It was like John was talking about with with the turtles. You know, it just was real button mashing, and like, I guess if you're playing a sword fighting character, you know, it'd have been okay. But I was playing in the beta as a ranger, and it's like, it feels really ridiculous when you can't get any space to shoot a bow, which is what rangers are supposed to do. But a couple people had told me in the intervening period, now that it's launched and it's free to play, you know, it's basically you're free and you have little, you know, incentives or whatever to give Sony money, which I'm okay with. They've done it right in that they give you enough to basically play the game as long as you want without ever spending a dime. Which that kind of free-to-play model I'm okay with, because then if I like your game, I'm going to give it money because I like it and want it to stick around. But interestingly, much like I was talking about with Kenshi, Dragon's Prophet has been helped by the fact that I played with some friends of mine a game called C9, which was just basically a button masher. It was the one I talked about that was basically Street Fighter crossed with an MMO. I'm far more comfortable with button mashing hack and slash in MMOs now after having played C9 and enjoyed it to a certain extent. So Dragon's Prophet's been far better this time around. And I mean, come on, like I was telling these guys before the show, you get to capture a dragon that you can ride and do whatever you want with 5 minutes into the game, maybe 15 minutes at most. And then you can capture other dragons. And that's the reason I'm bringing that up is, A, it's bitching. If you like MMOs, you get a mount right off the bat. And B, Sony or whoever made Dragon's Prophet has probably got the best animal capture system I've ever seen once you understand it. Now, being too much of a veteran player, I did not pay attention to the tutorial at first, and so I had problems with it for a sec, and I thought, okay, there's something I'm definitely doing wrong here. Let me go look at the tutorial. And once I did, the concept of capturing a dragon is basically you're riding it like you would a horse in Red Dead Redemption. You know, you're breaking it to ride, except they actually give you pretty neat little UI cues to tell you how to stay on the animal, unlike Red Dead Redemption, where you just kind of flop back and forth and hope you stay close enough to the middle that the damn horse settles down. So that's really interesting. I'm not too far along in it, much like other Sony games. It's got some crash issues. I'm not going to hold those against it yet, but it definitely has its quirks. And so I got to play it a little bit this morning before my internet died of old age, apparently. And I'm enjoying it. I'm hoping that my internet will be fixed by tomorrow, because I'm supposed to do some multiplayer fun with some people from Google Plus, and so I'm looking forward to seeing how it works with groups and things. And that's all I've been playing this week. Glaze, have you heard of this EverQuest Next, or was that EverQuest Next Landmark?
I haven't heard of it before.
Yeah, you at least go take a look at it. Like I said, I don't know if they have a Mac version. It's kind of interesting the way Sony's doing it. There's EverQuest Next, which, pun fully intended, because Sony just can't name shit, it's the next EverQuest MMO, following, you know, EverQuest 1 and EverQuest 2. And then they did this thing called Landmark. And there's rumors, and I think I even read this from Sony, that like some of the buildings and some of the things players are creating will end up in EverQuest Next as a background model, or, you know, something to that of that sort. It would definitely appeal to your artist side, you know, because like the basic tools that you get are one thing, but then you can upgrade and research other tools, you know, select tool, line tool. I've heard of a paint tool, you know. The biggest problem I'm having, and it's just I'm going to have to do some homework and read the wikis, I'm not finding the correct resources at the moment. But yeah, I definitely look into it, because it's definitely not as labor intensive as Worm. It's, to me, it's as fun as Minecraft. It's just prettier. It's voxel versus blocky is basically what it is. Okay, so yeah, see, like I said, it's Sony. I would be surprised if they didn't have a Mac version, but then again, I wouldn't be utterly shocked either if they didn't. Okay, so John technically wasn't supposed to be here, as he talked about earlier, and he recorded a question for us. And now he's going to ask us that question, and we're going to discuss it. So, what did you have on your mind, John, when you recorded that little thing that was 2 minutes long. I know that much before the internet gave out.
Yeah,
I had it saved the hard drive before the internet let go.
How often do I ever talk about anything for less than 2 minutes, right? But the
no, actually, I thought I'm used to the Patmans, you know, which including toilet flushes are usually like 8 to 10 minutes.
That's so right.
I saw two. I'm like, oh wow, okay, that's cool. Length, as long as it's under 30. You know, or under 15, but anyway. So, what'd you have on your mind?
Well, it's part and due to the game, to the other game that I was playing this week, Flappy Bird, and I only picked up. I got that game. It was a free game on iOS and Google. It was on iOS and the Google App Store, for a little while there, and I got it because I heard lots of people talking about it, how hard it was and stuff. So I got it and tried it. And for those of you who haven't played it and I guess won't be able to play it, Flappy Bird is the most simple game I've ever played. You tap the screen to make this basically what's a cheep from Mario fly in the sky. And if you stop tapping, he sinks like a stone. If you keep tapping, he kind of flaps up and down. And the whole point is you're faced with two Mario green pipes that are one from the ceiling, one from the floor, and you have to make him fly through the gap in between the two, and then another gap, and another gap, and another gap, on and on and on, and try to get as high a number of pipes you've passed as possible. And what's interesting about Flappy Bird is I thought it was like it's so basic and so blatantly ripping off the artwork from Nintendo. I kind of just was like, yeah, whatever. But I did find myself playing it more than I thought I would. And I think it's kind of because, you know, a new game starts pretty fast. You can just try to beat it, and you can use leaderboards and stuff. But the topic that I wanted to touch on was addictive games. And this is one of those because the developer behind the game pulled Flappy Bird from the iOS and Google app stores because he felt, I guess in a word, guilty, or felt bad that people were becoming addicted to his little game. And to the point, and I saw online some of the vicious tweets that people were sending him about killing him, for example, if he took the game down, or I'm going to kill my brother if he beats my score, and all this kind of crazy stuff. I don't know if that was part of it or what, but he took it down because of the addictive nature of it. And so my question for you guys was, what did you think of him taking the game down for that reason? Because for what I've heard, this guy was making 50 grand a day in ad revenue, because it's a free game, and as you play, ads pop up, right? He was making 50 grand a day in ad revenue and gave that up because of this addictive thing. Apparently he denies it, and Nintendo actually denies it, that it had to do with stolen art assets, but he says it's because of the addictive nature again. So what do you guys think of that? And then part two of my question was, what are some games that you have personally found very addictive and couldn't stop playing? And I'll start with Gunsage today.
There it is. Okay. I found the mic. Okay. So, as far as going ahead and taking down the game for being addictive, well, I heard a couple of mixed things regarding that. I don't know. I mean, if that's really the reason he took it down, I would still have mixed feelings about it, only because I'm inclined to say there's no such thing as video game addiction, but I have played some fairly addictive video games. We're just doing part one of the question so far.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, okay. I don't really think he should have taken it down necessarily. I think, honestly, that's up to the player to decide, you know, whether or not it's, you know, whatever. It's not like he's some virtual bartender, like, all right, I think you've had enough. I'll tell you when I've had enough, Flappy Bird! You know, I'm not... Yeah, that's kind of the weird part for me, because it's not like you see, you know, WoW going ahead and saying, hey, listen, man, you've gone ahead and played this game for 10 hours today, you should probably take a break, or, you know, something like that. I don't know, it seems a little weird to me if that really is the reason he took it down. I heard it was something about the financial aspect was changing his life or something, but if it's more about the addictive aspect, I think that's kind of strange, only because on the one hand I want to give him kudos because it's like he's taken a moral stance on it, like, oh my god, you know, these people are doing all this crazy shit because of my game. But on the other token, if it's me and I'm going, oh wow, this game's really that addictive, awesome, let me make a way to go ahead and, you know, make more money off of it. But that's just me, because I'm fucking evil, so there you go.
Fair enough.
Couple things before you move it to whoever you want, John. First off, there is video game addiction. The problem becomes with that is the people who try to use somebody being addicted to a video game as the reason for video games being evil. You know, I don't hear people doing that with too much with alcohol, pot, you know, tobacco, harder drugs. I mean, I think you can become easily addicted to a video game to the point you need professional help. But I think it's a person-by-person personality deal. Second thing that I wanted to clear up Gunsage, WoW did actually attempt to stop people from grinding 15, 20 hours a day back when it first started. They put in this thing called a rest state where, like, after a couple, after I think 5 or 6 hours, you started getting far less XP from hardcore grindy things, you know, like trying to kill the same boss over and over again. You still got XP if you did quests, but to grind your soul away for 15 hours on quest alone, the way WoW's set up, is pretty damn difficult. So WoW has, some MMOs have tried to introduce things that will stop people from dying in Korean and Chinese cyber cafes. Obviously, it hasn't worked. And usually they back off when players start whining and crying like little bitches. So, anyway, sorry, John.
Well, that's cool, man. Why don't you go ahead and tell me what you think about him shutting it down for feeling bad about addiction?
Here's the thing. I'm kind of like Gunsage in this respect, that it's not his responsibility for people getting addicted to his game. Because here, you know, people now, and I guess it probably started about 15, 18 years ago, say addiction is a disease. Yes, addiction is a disease once you are addicted to whatever. And it's not just video games, you know. As I just said, booze, drugs, tobacco, whatever. The initial use of the addictive product is a choice. That's where would be my delineation. And to me, that's where the creators of things are not to blame for people's addictions. Obviously, that gets a little grayed out, you know, when companies like tobacco companies and booze companies try and hide the effects of the addiction or try to downplay, you know, the effects of their product. But video games, that's not the case. So I'm suspicious and cynical of his reasoning for pulling it down. So I was, when I first read about this, I intended to skip over it, actually, John, so I'm glad you brought it up, because I couldn't think of a good angle. Because there's more to this story, and I think Nintendo's in there somewhere. Because as fast as Nintendo attempts to rip down Let's Plays on YouTube and whine and cry about it, I got to believe that Nintendo is behind it somewhere. And this gentleman's Vietnamese, correct?
I think so.
I do believe so. You know, and he just, every statement he makes doesn't contradict himself. He doesn't really contradict himself, but he just muddles it more and more. You know, and Vietnam's a communist country. I also kind of wonder, too, is the amount of money he was making causing him issues with his comrades at arms in the government? you know, I don't think we're ever going to know the truth. But if he pulled it down because he was afraid of addiction, people getting addicted, then bravo. I mean, I'm sure he probably made $300K US before that happened. Mm-hmm. And if he made $300,000 USD, I would suspect he's probably living large in whatever money there is in there, whatever the currency is in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Because I expect that the exchange rate is extremely favorable.
I'd have to imagine.
Because it's not Euro. I know they're not part of the European Union. They're communists. So that's out. So my suspicion would be that he's probably doing okay. Anyway, yeah, that's pretty much my thought on it. I'm not convinced that the whole story's out there.
Yeah. And Glace, you?
Well, I actually downloaded the app when the hype train started about maybe 2-3 weeks ago. And I still don't entirely understand why there was a hype train in the first place. Probably one of the least addicting games I've ever had the opportunity of playing. I turned it on, I pressed the flap, whatever, touched the screen, died like 5 times, said, okay, I'm done. And that was about it. Didn't rage quit or anything, just that was all I needed. So I really don't understand why this game got the hype that it did. But nevertheless, I'm definitely on the same side of Bruce, saying that there's definitely something more behind the story. It's definitely not just, oh, I'm taking it down for video game addiction. Because those tweets were obviously not serious. Maybe there was a language barrier, and he wasn't understanding that most people were being sarcastic about how they're going to kill people. But I'm pretty sure the guy is smart enough to know that everyone, it was just a huge joke in terms of how much influence it had on them. So I definitely think there's something shady, whether or not it was Nintendo or another company offered him a deal or something, or another company had some threats against them. But I don't know. I definitely think for financial reasons he took it down, not because of he wanted to be a good person. So
yeah.
You know, by the way, my high score is 21.
You know, the funny thing is, that's definitely not Glace and I's type of game. Having listened to Glace talk about mobile and handheld games before, that's really not your speed, is it?
Yeah, I really don't understand it at all. That, like, who would subject themselves to that? I mean, I understand why it's good fun for, like, quick stuff. Like, I played it the other day where I was, like, I was waiting for the elevator, and that's about a 45-second wait, and so I just pressed the app button, and I died, like, 2 times. It's like, okay, elevator's here, and then I put it away. Like, it wasn't, like, I'm not, like, laying in bed until 4 in the morning trying to fly through pipes, trying to justify my life through a high score. I just don't get it at all.
See, once it got taken down, and I started seeing, you know, iPhones on eBay for $10,000 that had it installed, I started looking for idiots in my local area that I could buy their phones for a couple $100 and pop them on eBay. No, I found a friend of mine that had it installed on his on his Android phone, and I played it for 5 minutes. And I stopped by his office, and I'm like, He's like, isn't it really cool? I'm like, no. I'm like, Bejeweled Blitz does the same thing for me. Yeah. You know, it's like, when I want to play for 45 seconds or a minute, like Glace is talking about waiting for an elevator, waiting for this, waiting for that. Bejeweled Blitz is far more entertaining, and there's no copyright there. Yeah, PopCap's owned by EA now, but other than that, it's pretty much clear sailing. You know, it's not Candy Crush.
Yeah.
It's basically just ripped off. And that's the other thing about ripping off. If this wasn't Nintendo, I would dismiss the ripoff angle. Because even the hardcore Candy Crush fans would have to admit, if you saw Bejeweled Blitz and Candy Crush side by side, it's like, oh really? Mm-hmm. I couldn't understand why that one took off. It's like, dude, I've got Bejeweled Blitz for free on my tablet. Why do I want to put up with Facebook's crap? Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, the Flappy Bird was the number one app on both platforms, iOS and Android, and the best line that I read about Flappy Bird is that it's proof that nobody can predict what the market will want, And as much as people tack on multiplayer and they add all these bells and whistles to make things more attractive to sell, this is proof that the most simplest concept can be a huge hit, right? But for me, on the surface, not even so much from a addiction point of view, but if he followed his heart and if he did really feel bad about it and didn't just swallow it and took the money, like if it was actually an ethical thing that was weighing on his mind and he acted on it, I would give him kudos for that. I wouldn't be surprised if there's more to the story, as you guys have suggested, something going on that this is just the cover story for it. But if it's as it is on the surface, then I'm proud of the guy for doing it, but as far as addictive games, so this is kind of more what I wanted to get into, something lighter. Just thinking about games that I found myself compelled to going back to are the kinds of games that are actually, the more I thought about it, are kind of like more expanded versions of Flappy Bird. Flappy Bird is, one simple task to get a high score and hopefully beat your friends and do better and better. So it made me think of games like Geometry Wars 2, especially the pacifism stage. I played that forever trying to beat my brother-in-law's scores and some friends that are on my list, and I found myself going back. I mean, I had all these other games, like the Gear, at the time, Gears of Wars, and Halo 3 was sitting there, and I had all these games that were high, like blockbuster things, and all I wanted to do was beat the pacifism score. I was obsessed, and so games like that, I get it, right? Another one more recently, it would be Super Hexagon on my iPhone. I think of all the games on my iPhone, I played that thing the most, trying to get as far as I could, beat the scores, and that, that one is, again, you're trying to get a little triangle through these hoops, and while it's a lot more twitchy and more, artistic and more, the music is pounding and stuff, and it's more exciting, it's the same sort of thing, very simple concept that I found myself wanting to go back to over and over. So I'll pass it on to Gunsage again, I guess. Any particular games, and it doesn't have to be puzzle, of course, but any games at all that you found yourself compelled to go back to over and over?
Well, typically most of what I play is RPGs, and they can be addictive to a degree in and of themselves, just because you're grinding. You grind and you grind and you grind, and that's how you make progress. It's a repetitive thing, but that's how you get by in the game. But it gets to the point where, especially if you've been playing role-playing games as long as I have, that you enjoy grinding so much that literally you will... Like, okay, one thing I've been doing with Disgaea 2 lately is I'll pop it on, and I won't even bother playing the actual story mode. I just go in and I start grinding my characters. I'll just go ahead and start, just grinding and grinding and grinding and grinding over and over and over again until I've leveled up a little bit. And that might take 3 hours, maybe even 4 hours or something, that I just save and quit and go do something else. And, but the one game that really surprised me, and this is usually how it happens, is I'll be sitting there playing and I go, I don't really understand what the appeal of this game is. I mean, it's fun, I guess. And then I'll kind of look over and go, holy shit, I've been playing this game for 10 hours. And that's usually going to be something along the lines of The Sims, or possibly Plants vs. Zombies, or just something that it's relatively casual in nature, Fable 2, Fable 3, stuff like that. And I think that's another reason why so many developers are gearing their games to be a little more casual lately, where they don't have to be super hard, they don't have to have these ridiculous penalties to them. I mean, obviously I latched on Dark Souls pretty quickly, so I enjoyed, a punishing difficulty in that nature, but most of the time I keep coming back to games that there's really no penalty for dying. You just kind of, okay, let's go ahead and do this again. And, you're not really taking that far back. You can keep playing. You can have a lot of fun with it. You don't even really have to play the main game. You just keep playing it, and you can't explain exactly why it is, you seem to keep coming back to it for one reason or another. It's just crazy.
There's a mute button. Cool. How about you, Glace? Any games that you just mentioned one earlier? Awesome Knots, right?
Awesome Knots. I'd say Awesome Knots is pretty addicting, but I wouldn't call it the same sort of addicting as Flappy Bird is for some people, just because I haven't been in the right mood to play Awesome Knots. You know, Flappy Bird, I can understand why people are just like obsessed over in terms of just, okay, I can play this right now and get it over with. And so if I had to equate a game that I do play to that, I would say Flood It, which is also an app. The first time I played Flit was actually on Google Plus, of all things. That was crazy. Basically, this little game down there where it's a grid of squares that are different colors, and they're all jumbled up. And you start at the top left corner, and you get to the bottom right corner. And to do that, you have to basically swap your colors with the colors next to your square. So it's sort of a puzzle game that you only have a limited amount of steps to get to the next corner and make the board the same color. So you have to choose whether I want to make the squares green or do I want to make them red. It's really simple, but it can get really hard at the same time. You basically, it takes about a minute to complete a board. And I find myself, I play that a lot, but I don't really have a game where I have to play it all the time. I never really was like that. Maybe back when I was younger and I played Pokemon all the time, but that was just because I was a kid, I had nothing else to do.
But, Minecraft?
I mean, yeah, Minecraft, but I was always able to put it down if I needed to put it down. Maybe that's just because of who I am, but...
Well, that's not to say you can't put it down, but you just feel yourself compelled to return to over and over, I think, is more what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, Minecraft was in the super hype phase. I guess I went back to it a lot, but I mean, I barely touch it now, so I don't know.
Cool, and how about you, Bruce?
It really depends. You know, you were talking about your thing with Geometry Wars. I can get into that, and Gunsage and I had some pretty good scoring battles when the Xbox Live Arcade thing was going on. But here's the rub. Once it gets to a certain point, like if they top my score and I know it's going to be a real huge frustration to reach it, then it's done. You know, I can walk away from things when I've reached what I feel is my peak or the best I'm going to be able to accomplish in scoring type games. So I can get a little bit like you do in Geometry Wars, but there is a limit that once I know I've gone as far as I can humanly go, I'm done. Where I get more tapped in, and it's obvious, I'm sure all three of you could think of this answer, are games like Minecraft, Worm, EverQuest Next, Landmark looks like it's going to be the same, because it's the ultimate freedom. I don't have so much of an issue with when I'm given unlimited choice, I can't make a decision. I like the concept that I've come to term as, what do you want to do today? But it's still not true addiction. Minecraft was probably the closest. I know a few dickheads were making snide comments on at Cesspool Facebook and our website a couple times about, you know, oh yeah, he's just super addicted to Minecraft. Well, yes and no. I mean, yeah, I've had it and played it since, you know, since the alpha when I bought it. But I'm like Glace, you know. Well, I'm not entirely like Glace because Glace is pretty much all about giving up the ship. I mean, I go through spurts. But that's the thing. It's not true addiction if you go look up addiction in the dictionary, because there comes times where I go through lulls. You know, where I really won't put any effort into it. Even something like Worm Online, where I actually pay money, you know, periodically. But the things that give me ultimate freedom, I'm starting to understand about myself that I don't like restrictions as I get older. I think a combination of that and douche nozzles are why most of the FPS games I'm seeing hitting the market, I'm just like, no thanks. Yeah. Same old, you know, I mean, it's like Pats, I think, tried to get into the Titanfall beta, and between the fact that it's another run around and shoot people, and the fact that they're trying to sell me a half a game for $60, it just doesn't interest me. and it's just not going to get me to go to those same levels of addiction or whatever, or obsession, like they did when, you know, Pat Gunsage and I were playing. What was that, Gunsage? Was it Modern Warfare 1 or 2 with the shield? Gunsage?
Shield!
Thank you. There we go. That's what I wanted. What was that? Was that 2?
Yes.
That was 2, because I just bought my 360 with 1, so I was lone wolfing it in 1, and then I met Pat and his buddy Ipinch in Gears of War 2, and then you got in there with us with the, yeah, that fucking goddamn riot shield. It was funny for a while, and it's funny when he says it now, but it did get to a point where if somebody else had said shield again, I was going to crawl through my microphone and yank their nuts off, because it got to the point where we went too far with it. But anyway, John, to answer your question in my roundabout way, those would be the 2. I think now, freedom, ultimate freedom to do whatever the hell I want, is going to hook me in way faster than anything else.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Cool.
But do you find yourself, like with Geometry Wars and things of that nature, going when even maybe in the back of your mind you know that there's just no fucking way I'm doing this? Or do you have a stop? Well, I'm always curious about that.
When I play that kind of game, I'm usually in the just one more try, you do your best when you're in the zone, like you're just, when you don't try is when you get the best scores, and you're just trying to find yourself not trying. It's a weird mindset that I get in on those, you know.
Yeah, see, I guess I'm,
oh my
just
gosh, no, the worst though is freaking checkers on iPhone. When you play checkers and you put the computer up all the way, oh my gosh. I feel like a retarded 2-year-old, like, oh my goodness, it's just terrible. Because, like, they'll trick you into, like, doing a triple jump in, like, the second move, and then you just, like, it gives you the option of doing undo, but you know if you press undo, then you're a huge sissy, and you should just forfeit already, but, oh my goodness. Yeah, if you like your life, don't download freaking checkers.
I have a chess app, because I was taught to play chess by my mom's cousin when I was about 10 or 11, and I love the game. I prefer the real board to human player, but I downloaded a chess app, the top-rated one I could find on the Google Play Store, for my tablet. And I'll play it sometimes at night when I'm relaxing before I go to bed, right? One evening, I decided to turn it up to master, because, you know, the guys that compete, and you see them with the little clocks, and, you know, they look like they're about ready to have an aneurysm, are called masters. Oh, my fucking God. Dude, 2 moves. the damn thing just slaughtered me in 2 moves. Like, I went with the standard strategy I have. I don't know the knight to pawn 6 bullshit, all those numbers, but I went with standard strategy that I have that I beat fairly good players with. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this. Okay, he's moved. Oh, this is going to work well. I move this, and the fucking just lights out. It was like Mike Tyson hitting you right between the eyes. I'm like, how in the hell did he do that? And Glacinander's absolutely right. You're the only one that's ever going to know. But hitting undo, you feel like just such a sissy. You won't do it. You'll just keep thinking. I don't know how many games you've made yourself suffer through, Glacier, with checkers turned all the way up. But I played twice. I played twice on Master of Chess, and it's never going back there again. Dead air. Are you done, John?
Oh, sorry. Oh, there. Okay, that's better. Yeah. I'm all finished. Yeah. That's. I just wanted to talk about, you know, games that we find addictive, and just a little chat about what happened with Buddy. So
it's kind of funny. We're gonna have to do in the next couple of months. We'll have to do a little bit more on just pure addiction, because I thought maybe that's where this was gonna go. Because I read so many news stories that once the Flappy Bird thing had gotten into mem form on Google+, you know, because that's where more of the tech heads and nerds hang out these days. I just went, okay. No, I don't care anymore. And so it completely was wiped from my mind. And so when I just saw your Dropbox, you know, the file name, I went, oh, okay, game addiction. Yeah, that might be a pretty cool discussion. We can get some good, you know, and I start thinking in terms of what we could do or how I would want to, you know, phrase my stuff. But I've completely forgotten about Flappy Bird. Yeah, now there's Flappy Bert, I think, from Sesame Sesame Street. The best meme I saw, though, that you guys will have to go hunt up, is the game board, right? And Mario and Princess Peach are sitting there having a picnic, and there's a voice bubble over Princess Peach, and she goes, "This is not exactly the bird watching I thought you had in mind." To me, that was the most clever, the most clever meme I saw. Okay, so let's talk about something Gunsage mentioned in his what he's been playing, and I think at least Gunsage and I are going to have vastly different views on this, but I could be reading that wrong. Valve, in its never-ending effort to try to be everybody's best friend, added the hashtag functionality to Steam. Now, I saw this. I was getting ready to play something on Steam, either Dragon's Prophet or Borderlands 2, which I did play more of. I forgot to talk about what I've been playing. I still haven't beaten it yet. Got distracted. And I just went, this is not a good idea. My initial reaction was the community is going to make you wish you had not done this. And interestingly enough, as much as I can be contrarian and cynical, and that's kind of what I do, I was really hoping that that wasn't going to be the case, but I had this feeling that what has happened was going to happen. For those of you that don't know, the community did as they're, want to do, and they have put, like, on Gone Home, they put Not a Game. I've seen ASCII tit art on some, which was impressive, I have to admit. And it just, I personally think, and this is kind of where I want to start the discussion, I personally think they just need to do away with it. Steam is getting a little too messy and a little too bucket of worms right now. You know, and this is leaving out everything else Valve's doing. Just the Steam service. And I think the tags are going to need a major rework, and so they should just go away right now. That's my premise. Glacinator, let's start with you. What do you think of what's happening with the tags and what should happen with this feature? Take it off. Take it.
I don't even use Twitter. You guys hear at the end of every episode, silence whenever you say your Twitter names. I don't really like Twitter. I don't like hashtags. I think it promotes just easy peasy buzzwords that don't mean anything, and then people latch onto them, and then they try to get good information, and it doesn't really work that well. I mean, you may feel differently, but I don't like that type of information personally. So when I saw this on Steam, I was just like, ugh, I don't even use Steam as a community, really, that much. I mean, I can see when my friends are playing games, and sometimes I enjoy them, but other than that, I don't really participate in anything. And so, I just feel like this is not necessary. You know? And I definitely agree that getting way too cluttered. And I still don't think they've added the Mac homepage back yet, either. So, there's a Linux one, but no Mac. So,
you're right about it. Hashtags, really, to explain, I guess. Hashtags, really, it depends on what service you're using and what you're doing it with. On Twitter and on Google+, if you search a specific game name, like, say, EQ Landmark, for example, or Minecraft, you will usually find extremely useful stuff that you would not have found otherwise. So hashtags do have a certain good use. That's 10% of the time. 90% of the time, I'm right there with you, Glaze. They make no sense to me because it's usually stupid shit like, what did Justin Bieber do this week? Or, you know, it's the same with trending and all that garbage. The thing is I guess it really comes down to, for the user, do you want to glean the straw for the wheat, essentially? You know, so, and they're not completely useless in an overall sense. And they're not just a Twitter thing anymore. My God, they're everywhere. So it's not surprising Steam did this. But Glace, I think you do have a pretty excellent point that they kind of are, except in some cases, useless. John, what do you think of all this stuff?
I think the tags have a use, in that if I want to click on a tag and I want to see, you know, what are all the Japanese RPGs on Steam. Rather than having to go dig through everything, I can just click on that tag, boom, here's the list. But if it's tagged with a particular developer, or boom, it's there. Like, I know there's some filters down at the bottom you can use too, but like, that's the kind of thing I'm getting at. But I think that, you know, making it so open as they have, you know, you're just opening up the gates to the jerks and the racists and the homophobes to put whatever they want to put up there, and you know, they need some moderators pretty desperately if you're going to leave it open like that. So I don't know. Is it a good idea? I think there's a purpose behind it, but I don't, you know, leaving it open as such, like, you can get some funny ones, I guess, but, you know, some of them can be pretty hateful.
Well, you know, you just said open, you know, like open community. You know what the thought I just had when you said that? Was, it seems like that Valve is trying to act more like a Linux-based community, which, while nutty, generally tends to be better behaved for the most part than your average PC/console communities. The problem is, if what I'm thinking is, or if my line of thought is correct, that Valve is trying to act more like an open source Linux kumbaya commune, you got your service on too fucking many PCs for that to work well. It ain't going to happen. You know? To tie into that, too much of your bottom line comes from PC gamers at this point to try and act like, you know, Linux 2.0 Kumbayaville. It's just not going to work. You're saying open community really makes me wonder, you know, what's driving the goal here.
Yeah, trying to make a parallel between what they're trying to accomplish and
then, Yeah, good luck. You know, yeah. PC gamers love to tout that they're so much, they have such a better community than console gamers. I've been head first in both for years, and I can tell you right now, no. They both have their good people, and they both have their unmitigated dickheads. It's just the nature of the beast. Gunsage, what do you think of tags? Should they stay? Should they go? Were they a good idea? Yada, yada.
Here we go. Well, yeah. The whole time you guys have been talking, I've been going ahead and looking at ridiculous-ass Steam tags. We got a bunch of them on here, like, not Shenmue, and, you know, fuck this abortion, and all kinds of just ridiculous stuff on there. And don't get me wrong, they're hilarious. Some of them are.
Wait, which was not Shenmue attached to?
It was just attached.
Sorry to interrupt, but I gotta know which one that one was attached to.
It was attached to just some random role-playing game, and so I clicked on the tag, and it just came up with a bunch of different other random games where other users thought it was funny, so they just tagged it with not Shenmue over and over again, just for
no reason. So there was no basis in the fact that they were like Shenmue clones or anything.
Exactly.
That's like digging. Shenmue's not exactly the newest game on the market. That's digging back a bit.
I mean, it's definitely funny, but it kills the original purpose. Like, for example, the new Castlevania game is getting ready to come out, and I had to stop myself because I very badly wanted to put on there not Twilight, or, you know, just something sarcastic. And then I thought to myself, okay, but who does that benefit? I mean, yeah, you'll get a chuckle, probably, but it's not, first of all, that's a worthless tag anyway. What are you going to, I mean, I guess you could put it on Vampire the Masquerade and a few other games, but it's a sarcastic-ass tag. You know, if you really wanted to help out, then you would say Vampire, or, you know, something like that. But one tag that I did stumble across that I thought was really cool that I wouldn't even thought about going ahead and putting on there was great soundtrack. Like, something that realistically, you know, Steam probably wouldn't have thought about either. Like, oh, does this game have a good soundtrack? Does it have, you know, this type of animation? Like, I've seen one that's like pixel art
or stuff like that. So I think what they're trying to do is, at least initially, they're opening it up to the community to get an idea of, well, number one, how idiotic are some of these people? But number two, you know, okay, along with the sarcasm, along with the knowledge, what tags are being put on here that are actually, oh, that's a good idea. You know, I wouldn't have thought about that. You know, just different stuff like that. Like, what was it? I went ahead and scrolled on here, and it says, what do we got? Browse all recommended tags. And there's some of them on there that are just kind of dumb, like diva developer or overrated or stuff like that. But then there's other ones, again, like, you know, the pixel graphics, science fiction, space, game development. And then, of course, there's some for specific types of people, like easy achievements, and I don't know, you know, just different stuff like that. So I see it potentially going somewhere, but I almost wonder if either A, they didn't think this through very well, or if B, they deliberately did this to deliberately open a can of worms so they can then go in, like, let's say a week later and try to go ahead and clean out the crap and find the actual legit tags that they can go ahead and start using, and then, you know, go ahead and moderate based on that. Especially because, you know, you get enough 4chaners in there, you're going to see some really, really offensive shit. So hopefully it doesn't quite get to that point. It's a good idea. They definitely need to refine it. So I don't know if this is part of the plan, or if Plan A just totally went to Plan Z.
Stupid phone wouldn't unmute. It's continuing the tradition. Hey, by the way, this is for Gunsage. Don't answer. This is for Glacinator and John. John, who do you think, or what game do you think the diva developer tag was stuck to?
Oh, I already know that answer.
Then don't give it if you already know it. Glacinator, which game do you think the diva developer, was appropriate as far as I was concerned too, tag, was it, which game was that attached to?
At this point, it could be half the industry, honestly.
Right, but think about it. Think about it for a second. It's a game you've played.
Yeah, Mr. Fez.
Yeah, bingo. I saw that. That's the only one that's made me crack up. I saw that on a news post and I died laughing. Yeah, take that, fish, you bitch. Rage quit Twitter, will you? 4chan will fix your ass. You know, the interesting thing about what Gunsage was saying is part of the reason I'll never use tags on Steam is I'm already too well trained to search. You know, because we have, I mean, not everybody has two monitors like I do, but we have web browsers. So you look for a game, or you hear about a game, and so you go search your web browser, you go search on Steam in the search box. So random tag surfing for games I might have missed might be a good idea if they refine it, like Gunsage is talking about. But for the most part, I already know the name of the game I'm looking for, and I want to know if it's on Steam before I go look at GOG and other, you know, Green Man Gaming or other available avenues. I definitely think that hashtags have never become what they were supposed to be, because they were supposed to be a better method of searching, you know, a better method of indexing things. And like Glacinator said, you know, said, and Gunsage said, unfortunately the idiots get a hold of it and it's all over but shouting. But did you read that, John, somewhere that the diva developer tag was put on Fez?
Yeah, there was a... I think it was actually... It might have been in the article that you sent us.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I read that 3 days ago. I just... I wanted that as a primer. I kind of knew what I wanted to talk about. Okay, so, real quick, final question on this. Gunsage, we'll start with you. Just basically yes or no. Should they pull it down and start over?
No.
Okay. Glacinator, pull it down and start over? Yes or no?
I don't think it's necessary, so...
Just work with it from there.
Pull it down, don't start over.
Oh. Pull it down, don't start over. Gotcha. Okay, so we got don't pull it down, start it over. Pull it down, don't ever let it see the light of day again. John... You've heard the options. What do you think? Claysonator added a new one. I should have thought of that.
I think they should keep it and actually moderate it. Cut the crap. The useless crap.
Yeah, I think unless it gets like Gunsage was talking about, if the Zoo Pit at 4chan gets a hold of it, you're going to have to take it down to moderate it, because it's going to become something I'm not even going to want to see. But if that doesn't happen, if it doesn't need a total DEFCON destruction, and quite honestly, I'm kind of in Glacinator's camp. I don't see the point. I can use the search bar. Hashtags are okay in social media where I need to search for specific things or snippets of news that I heard about. You know, they do have their uses there, but on a gaming service, it seems a bit much to me. Okay, so last week I was talking about a subject, and I said something about Sony losing all kinds of money, and John, you may have to help me here if I forget it all, but the reason I'm bringing it up is to give you the actual facts. The guys have the news story sitting in front of them. I don't. But Sony did. They lost $1.1 billion. They're selling off their PC VAIO unit completely to some investment firm in Japan, and they're cutting 5,000 jobs. So my point is, much like it was last week, is that, you know, this isn't just Nintendo and Microsoft. You know, every tech company in all their divisions are doing less well than they'd like you to believe at times. My question for you, gentlemen, and it's just a quick question. Glace, we'll start with you. Is it more harmful to Nintendo because they just do games versus Sony and Microsoft, who do so many things? Or are they all kind of in the same boat no matter what? And by harmful, I mean the losing money, yada yada.
I don't think it's really as much a problem that Nintendo has all their eggs in one basket, just because they can, if something's wrong in that basket, they see it immediately and they can fix that problem relatively quickly. Rather than if you're all spread out, you know, you have your resources in different departments, then it's a little bit harder to isolate the problem, fix a problem, or get rid of the problem, and then you wasted all that money. Whereas, like I said, Nintendo, I think Nintendo has relatively quick fixes as compared to Sony.
Okay, yeah, because Microsoft's not bleeding cash, but their financials weren't great this year either. Gunsage, you next. Is it worse for Nintendo because they have all their eggs in one basket, like Glaze said? Or is it worse for the other two because they're all over the map?
I'd say it's probably worse for Nintendo only because, yeah, I mean, they've got, you know, a portable, and they've got the main system, and, you know, they've got a lot of options, but they specifically do the one thing. So on the one hand, yeah, they're focused, but that means that if they lose money despite that focus, then they're doing something wrong, and that could potentially lead to a lot of layoffs, depending.
Okay. Well, John, well, I guess you're not the deciding vote. I will be eventually, but one says one thing, one says the other. My brain's no longer working. What do you think? Who's it worse for?
I think for Nintendo, it might be a little bit worse, just because having the other divisions does provide a little bit more of a cushion. If one division is having trouble, with Nintendo, you know, 3DS is doing pretty good, so at least they have that. But it's not like they have a series of televisions that they are selling okay as well. You know what I mean? But they do have that focus. There isn't an advantage in that your eyes are on the prize. But I agree with Gunsage. If you're losing money despite the focus, what else? What do you have to help support you until you get things figured out?
I'm going to make it a tie group discussion, because I'm kind of like Glace. Now, maybe that's because I know that Sony's having problems in all their areas, and you know, they're even selling the PS4 at a slight loss.
and Microsoft is really having a lot of problems in a lot of their areas. Again, they're not destitute. None of the three are destitute or anywhere near bankruptcy. And that's where it becomes a language and information problem. Bottom line for me is I think it is probably not as bad for Nintendo because they can stay focused on the two or three core things they do. But at the same time, too, you've got to understand that what's muddling up the airways and where sometimes gaming media just blows it because they don't have the knowledge base is you have to filter out investor screeching. Because right now the investors are screeching at Microsoft to once again, now that they've got a new CEO, sell off the Xbox Entertainment Division. Because it's bleeding money. It's bleeding money. Go back to just software. Well, in all that investor screeching, they're leaving out the Surface tablets, which aren't doing so great, the phones, which aren't doing so great. So a lot of times, this information isn't necessarily hardcore financials that indicate true health of a company. It's tidbits filtered through investors who want to make a killing. They don't want to just make a tidy little profit. The ones that scream the loudest want to make a fortune, like they did with Apple, like they did momentarily with some of the other companies, you know. And so that really kind of muddies what we as the end consumer get as far as information goes. I think the thing for our listeners to understand and for other gamers to understand is while all three of them are having issues and the landscape could change in ways we're not quite sure about, I think overall that they're good to go for the time being. And the thing to remember is a lot of times the screaming you're hearing are from people who have a vested interest in the company they're screaming about rather than people doing, you know, partial analysis and looking at just the facts and not worried about their wallet. But bottom line is, you know, we talked about it last week. John seemed to express surprise because he hadn't saw the news. I saw it again this week, threw it in the show for the heck of it. So there you go. That's our podcast for this week. Let me do the quick exit thing and then we'll get the hell out of here. Let's see if I can remember it. First off, if you want to get in touch with us, we do have a Facebook. Don't use hashtags or Glitchnator will come around to your house with a fish bat. But our Facebook is WonderPod Online, all one word, WonderPod Online. Shoot us a friend request. Give us a fake like or two if you'd like, if you're working for a click farm. We have a website. It's called WonderPodOnline.com, all one word, WonderPodOnline.com. We're either really lazy at naming things or good at branding, depending on how you view it. Currently on WonderPodOnline.com, we have this podcast, obviously, but we also, I've been doing a little fiction short story based on some of my game time in Worm. I wouldn't necessarily call it role-playing per se, but it's based on events, things that I've actually experienced. Also, whatever, a gentleman who founded the original Project Wonder Boy, which is what kind of inspired the name when Pat and I were kicking around names for Wonder Pod, is back on WonderPodOnline.com. He just reviewed Madden 25. Yes, I know. Ooh, sports games. What? Can't have sports games. Yeah, imagine that. Might have sports news, too, one of these days. So you should check that out. Patman's kicking up Xbox One videos when he gets some time to play, well, mostly Killer Instinct. but also with this podcast, we post an embedded player. And that way you don't have to download MP3s. If you'd like to download MP3s, though, we are on iTunes. Search WonderPod, archive.org. If you don't like iTunes, search WonderPod. We have some forums, which you can get from our website, wonderpodonline.com. They're there. Use them. What else? We do have a Twitter account. We don't use hashtags, though. It's at wonderpodonline.com. At WonderPodOnline. At WonderPodOnline. If none of that works for you, because I'm tired of this thing, we have an email address. It's WonderPod@WonderPodOnline.com. WonderPod@WonderPodOnline.com. Or you can follow me on Twitter if you'd like, at ORIGIM. Or you can follow John on Twitter.
At John Keo, JONKEHOE.
Until episode 195, here's hoping I get this out by early Friday morning.
or Pat and Roger are going to riot. See you, people.
Cheers.
Hashtag exit.
Oh, you stole what I was going to do. Screw you. Hashtag screw you, lame 2014. Hashtag fish fez piss.
Well, I was wondering who was getting the tits. I was wondering who was going to hop in there because it's like they're both stalling and I'm going, okay, who's going to go? Who's going to go? Hashtag screw you. That's probably going to be the banner for this week. Hashtag up yours.